Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
One of the issues with our team right now is mental toughness, discipline, and execution.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. It's been a little while. As always, I'm your host, Jason Staples. Have been a little hesitant to record something the last, say, week and a half or so. A lot that has seemed to be going on. And I've had also a lot on my plate in terms of other things, off the field stuff, as it were, for myself. And I didn't want to record anything until I'd at least gotten in contact with some folks that I trusted a little bit more and got a little bit more of a sense of what's actually going on. And quite frankly, it's not exactly easy to tell right now, just because there's not a whole lot of information working its way out through various channels in Tallahassee. They're being pretty careful right now, and that's a good thing. A couple of the sources that I talked to have basically referenced that the staff right now, they're just kind of letting things sit and letting some media stew in their own juices and letting some things work their way out while they're taking care of business behind the scenes. And given that, I don't want to go too far on anything or say anything that I'm not more certain of or certain that it should be said at the moment. But that said, I think ultimately, I've got plenty to go with here to make this an interesting show. And if anything, I'm going to be trying to squeeze some stuff in here. So might as well go ahead and get right to it. Now, before I start, I do want to, as always, thank Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. The first of what is what's coming is actually the Unconquered Podcast Realtor Family, which I'll talk about here soon. But Luis, of course, the first among those. Worth mentioning, as always, that he is trained as a videographer and photographer. Nobody does better advertising for a property than Luis. Actually, I went ahead and pulled up a property that he's listing in the Ponte Vedra area in Florida. And listen, you're going to want to click on this link in the show notes, just because you're going to want to see the level of photographs and video and all that to make your property look as good as possible. And you'll see what I'm talking about. The dude knows what he's doing. But anyway, more to come on that in terms of the Unconquered Podcast Network of Realtors and how that's all going to work. But anyway, thanks to Luis, as always, for sponsoring the show. We'll talk a little bit more about the second sponsor a little later in the show, but we'll go ahead and move on from there. Now, first things first, I think it's important. And this is really going to be the theme, at least for the early part of this podcast. It's important for everybody listening who is a Florida State fan, which is, I'm guessing, pretty much everybody, that you step away from the ledge. Just, there's no reason to jump yet. There's no reason to jump. And, you know, consider that there may be a little bit better things coming down the pike than things look at the moment. And I've gotten that from more than one place now, and two places that are impeccable, two sources that are impeccable. I mean, I you're not going to get better sources. I can think of one source that would be better than the sources that I got these from. And ultimately, talked to one recently, and that source basically said, listen, things are fine. We're not letting a whole lot get out right now. Don't really want to have a whole lot out there in terms of what's going on. But when it's all done, you know, there's a good plan in place, and you know, they feel comfortable. Basically, it's good right now that the expectations are and impressions out there aren't that great. In some respects, because when some of this other stuff gets done, it's gonna really work well. So that's a good thing. There's still some confidence among people who should know. And then, you know, I got contacted by another source that I haven't heard from in quite a while, but it's a source that has been impeccable in the past. And I don't think this source would have a problem with me directly quoting from what this source sent me, which was, don't make assumptions, and I'll paraphrase the first part. Don't make assumptions based on what the staff is thinking. Don't panic. And now I'll go ahead and quote. Quote, based on media speculation, based on what media thinks, just because it feels disjointed to some in the media, on the outside looking in, doesn't mean that it is. Judge at the end, not in the middle. End quote. Then there was a little bit more about Taggart has a good plan in place to make sure that he is more involved in player and staff evaluation and making sure that everything in terms of culture and all of that stuff is worked to where it needs to be. And that right now that's where a lot of that attention is, along with recruiting. And that the next couple moves that they're going to make are going to be the sorts of things that are going to be positive, not just for the short term, but for the long term and in terms of chemistry and all of that. So that's I'm only as good as my sources on that. And, you know, I can do analysis just based on film. And I've been working on getting some Baylor film. I've already gotten some. It's very difficult to get because the Briles circle tends to be very, the word that's often used among those who keep running into walls trying to get that film is proprietary about their film and about getting that stuff out there. But I've got a little bit, and I'm trying to get just a little bit more for the for some off-season breakdowns. But there is a little bit out there, and again, still working on getting a little bit more than what I have, and then we'll do some comparisons, of course, over on the Patreon page. But yeah, they're working on getting things to where everything is that where the chemistry in terms of the pieces on the staff fit the way that they need to be able to get things in place. So that's where that is. And again, I can do analysis based on that, on just having film and all that. But on some of this other stuff, I'm only as good as my sources. I think my sources here are pretty good. And they keep saying things are not as bad as they seem. So don't get too riled up or don't panic. Step away from the ledge a little bit, because there's still some stuff coming down the pipe. And actually, I tweeted almost 2 weeks ago that good, actually, I guess it was 2 weeks ago to the day, something like that, from when I'm recording this, that good news was coming for Florida State. And pretty much nothing good has happened since I tweeted that. So there's definitely some frustration out there among those who saw that and are saying, okay, well, you know, still waiting. But I can tell you that good news, as far as I'm told, is still on its way. But there are some things that they need to work out in terms of who's hired and in what roles. And there's still some inquiries out with the NCAA. And the NCAA, as you all know, does not work at warp speed. But there's still some inquiries there trying to assess which moves can be made both for the present and the future. Some of this involves a rule in which, how long does a guy have to be an on-field coach before that on-field coach gets moved to another position within the program? Because there's some fine print on the books that, let's say you hire a coach as your, I don't know, let's just as one of the 10 on-field coaches. And then 6 months later, you decide you want that coach to be an off-field coach rather than an on-field coach. Well, that can complicate things, because then especially if that coach has had some visits and all of these other things as an on-field coach, that may end up being a situation where that coach is not allowed to have contact with any players or recruits or whatever for, I think it's like 2 years, which obviously means that you can't hire that guy for that role. So you have to know who can move where. And then also, if you're going to hire a new coach and there's any chance that that coach would end up moving off the field at some other point or needing to any of that stuff, you need to know what you can do. And, you know, maybe you're hiring a guy and you're not sure whether that guy's going to be an on-field coach right away or whether he's going to have to be an analyst for a year in order to facilitate the proper chain to get all this to work. Again, nothing in on that front is totally determined because from what I'm told, they're waiting on some NCAA word on some of those things. But there's still good news coming down the pike. I still expect Randy Clements to be the offensive to be brought in to work with offensive line. I still expect, and this is actually what I was referring to with that tweet. I still expect Ron Dugans to be on the Florida State staff in some capacity. So having a return of Ron Dugans to Tallahassee now that he was on his way out at Miami at the time that I tweeted that, and then. Once he was fired from Miami, once he was let go by Manny Diaz when he took over, then that meant he's actually on Miami's payroll still. So he's offset in terms of salary. He comes cheap. Think about Sal Sunseri and all of that. In the past, Florida State able to hire some coaches in the past on the cheap because they were still on another school's payroll. That's going to be an example where Florida State's going to be able to get Ron Dugans for cheaper because he's still his salary's offset by his buyout clause at Miami. So, that was what I was referencing is that I was told at that time that the wheels were already in motion for Dugans to wind up back at Florida State. Just not sure exactly what role it's going to be yet, but at this point, I'm comfortable enough saying that I expect both Randy Clements and Ron Dugans to be hired. I'm not exactly sure when, but both of those guys to be on the staff at Florida State. Again, which roles, all of that stuff. Some of this stuff has not been carved out on who's going to be in what roles. But those guys I expect to be at Florida State. Now, as for a potential defensive backs coach to serve as the 10th assistant in place of the terminated Alonzo Hampton, rightly terminated Alonzo Hampton, I should say, that one's a little murkier because again, it depends a little bit on what ends up happening in terms of what shuffling can be done. So it's possible. I mean, here's the thing. The defensive staff can actually function with the numbers that it has. Ideally, that's not what you get. That's not what you want. It would be very helpful for that defensive staff to have one more scheme guy and one more guy to work with the defensive backs just because of numbers. It's sort of like in good schools, they talk about how, well, you know, we have an 8-to-1 student faculty ratio or, you know, a 4-to-1 student faculty ratio because the lower ratio means you get more attention. Well, it's the same way where if you've got a position group, let's say defensive back, where you have 16 or 18 players, that's an awful lot for one position coach, especially given the variance between in terms of what's expected between safety and corner. They're different positions. So ideally, you want two guys coaching that, which is why I criticized the Hampton hire to begin with in terms of, well, you know, I would have liked to have a true defensive backs guy. I don't believe in hiring a special teams only coach effectively. And Hampton was more or less that. He was not a guy that was really helpful as a defensive guy. So, you know, I don't believe in having a special teams only coach because there's just not enough time in the practice. You have to have that guy who's going to be coaching somewhere else. Now, here's the thing. That said, last year's defensive staff basically worked with the guys that they have. And that's a good enough staff that, you know, you could potentially get by with what you got. If you need to make an offensive hire and you can't shuffle things the way that you want to because of NCAA rules, it's possible that that 10th hire just adds a coach to the offensive side. And again, I don't think that's ideal, but that's the sort of thing that is plausible given that there are two well-respected offensive assistants that are Florida State's looking to bring in for in some function. So, you know, if you want to add Randy Clemens to the staff, you can do that as a 10th coach and just have him and Greg Fry as offensive line coaches, which that's entirely possible. Is it ideal? Probably not. But, you know, if the offensive line is in the shape that it's been in, having two guys working with, you know, the numbers there so that you can get more hands on, yeah, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. Again, it's not necessarily what I expect. But right now, until they know for sure what exactly is going to happen in terms of what moves can be made and where and all of these things, there's some stuff that's still not decided on that front, just in terms of a lot of things that we don't know what the makeup is going to be. All I can say, and again, it's kind of a long segment to talk through this, but all I can say is that I do expect Clemens and Dugans to be at Florida State. I'm not sure that we're going to see Florida State hire a defensive backs coach this cycle, a second defensive backs coach, that is. Harlan Barnett is already a defensive backs coach, obviously, and a very good one, by the way. So, yeah. Not clear that you're going to see that defensive backs coach, and I know Wesley McGriff was reported as already having been introduced as a defensive backs coach at Florida State. I didn't get any confirmation on that, but you know, again, and actually one of the sources that I have that's closest to that situation said that source didn't expect didn't expect McGriff to wind up on staff, even though McGriff would come cheap because he's being paid $1.1 million per year by Ole Miss in his buyout. So pretty big offset there. But anyway, not clear that we're going to see a defensive backs coach hired. Now there have been some other guys in addition to McGriff that have been interviewed that have talked with Taggart, even come into Tallahassee to take a look around. So it's possible that you do see a defensive backs coach hired, but it's not 100%. It's just not 100% what role a number of people are going to be in right now. They're still working through all of that until they get all this decided. But ultimately the aim is to work through and make sure that the final staff going into next year is as integrated and the chemistry is as good as possible. That's really what they're aiming for there. Because last year's staff, ultimately, one of the issues that they had was chemistry. It's not that there weren't good coaches on the staff, but you have to have good coaches that really all see the same kind of vision. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons Briles is such a good hire for Taggart, is because what Briles wants to do is what Taggart ultimately envisions. And Briles is, quite frankly, better at it than Taggart is in terms of Briles being more at the root level of that particular system. And I think this is going to be a positive, not just for Briles coming in with that offense and making a difference, but for the future, even after that. This is one where if you're Willie Taggart, you have a chance to have one of the innovators of that system and learn from that guy, and exactly every bit, everybody else in your program gets to learn exactly how this gets implemented by one of the people who has been around that system from the beginning, implements it. So that's a plus, right? That helps shape your program DNA. So I think with that, we'll go ahead and shift into another segment. Now, this next segment is, of course, brought to you by Garage Makeovers. They are the number one garage makeover company in South Florida, according to Home Advisor and Angie's List. Listen, they've been serving all of Palm Beach and Broward County since 2005, and they are the best in terms of making sure that you have the best possible garage overhead storage, polyaspartic flooring, slot wall, cabinets, anything that you have, anything that you can imagine might be what you want in your garage, they'll put it together. Heck, if you want a garage gym to be the perfect garage gym, I'd call the biscuit over at Garage Makeovers. Let him know that you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast. They'll make sure all of that's put together and that you'll have the perfect storage for it. Let him know I sent you. They'll make sure they treat you extra nice. All right. So I'm going to move into this in terms of player updates. The other thing that was a big deal at this point, and this was a big shot to the program. This hurt was that I had a source that was very confident. Actually, two different sources that were very confident that Florida State would get either Jalen Hurts or Justin Fields. The source on the field side actually went straight back to Fields' dad. That was the line from that source. Fields' dad actually early in the process was angling for Florida State, and Florida State wanted him. Fields' dad liked Willie Taggart, thought that would be a good fit. And ultimately, it was the quarterback coach who said, listen, I've had my guy Haskins up at Ohio State. I think with their situation offensively, the pieces around him, and Ryan Day at coordinator, I think they're probably the best bet for your son. And ultimately, that shaped that. But Fields was a lot closer to choosing Florida State than anybody realizes. And that one hurt. But the one that really hurts is Jalen Hurts not coming to Florida State. That's a situation that had been developing, for the lack of being able to say more, that had been developing for a while. And one of my sources, and this came more from the Florida State side rather than from the player side, but the source said that, yeah, that, you know, they felt like it was more likely than not that Hurts would end up choosing Florida State. And I think it was a surprise that Hurts wound up choosing Oklahoma. Now, I understand why he chose Oklahoma. I mean, if you're thinking about it from his perspective, if you go all the way back to Lane Kiffin, the reason that he chose Alabama with Lane Kiffin is that Lane Kiffin sold him and his dad on making him into an NFL player, an NFL quarterback. Kiffin actually said, and I remember Kiffin having said it, or this getting out that Kiffin had said it publicly, that Hurts was, you know, first round type quarterback. I don't believe he is. I don't believe he's an NFL quarterback. I believe he's a guy that's going to have to play safety or running back at the NFL level. But, you know, if he's a guy that believes that he should be playing quarterback in the NFL, well, Lincoln Riley's probably the guy, the best place to go. So you can't fault him for that, as opposed to going to Florida State where he would be used in more or less the way that he was at Alabama. So, you know, that was a bit of a bait and switch by Kiffin. Kiffin marketing him on coming to Alabama where you're going to learn to be an NFL guy. You're going to run an NFL type system. And then, of course, running the wheels off of him and treating him as more of a running quarterback than a throwing quarterback, because that's what he is. It's going to be interesting to see what Lincoln Riley does with him. Obviously, he's not going to throw like the kid that they had there this year. But there's a lot of run concepts that Riley will use with him. And, you know, it's, again, from the two kids' perspectives, hard to argue with Fields going to Ohio State, where he's going to be the starter and their playoff contender immediately because of him. And they've got a very well set offensive front. They've got talent around him. He's going to be dominant in the Big Ten. I mean, it's a really, really good decision. And if you're Hurts and you believe that you should be an NFL quarterback, well, OU is a great situation. They've got a solid offensive line. Basically, you're going to be able to walk right in, take over for Kyler Murray. That he knows how to use a quarterback that can run a little bit, but also is going to put you in position to look good as a thrower. Hard to argue with, but it hurts for Florida State to come up empty on those two guys, because, you know, ultimately they really wanted one of them, and they thought they were going to get Hurts. And from the other side, again, I'd heard from the field side, actually in early January or the very last few days of December, that, you know, Fields' dad was already looking at Florida State as the probable destination before that took the turn. So there's a good chance that they're going to get one of them, and they got neither. Struck out on both. You know, Florida State has kind of lived in the friend zone on some of these people lately, and on some of these recruits and transfers lately, and it's not helpful. You got to close the deal on some of these guys in order to take that next step. But they did close the deal on Dent, and you know, Hakeem Dent is going to be on campus, and is going to be, you know, he did early enroll. That's a big deal, because Dent is a guy that he's the one potential difference maker that I mentioned on the post early signing day podcast, that they hadn't really signed a major difference maker, you know, one of those potential difference makers early on, an impact guy. And he's one of those impact guys. He can make an impact potentially early in his career. And as an early enrollee, he's going to have a chance to compete for a starting role in the secondary. And the reason he's going to have a chance to compete for a starting role, even though, you know, again, those of you who know me know that I'm going to say very often, you're recruiting not for next year, but for the year following and the year following that. That's really what you're targeting. If you don't have the answers on your roster now, it's probably not going to work for next year. So don't expect, you know, a guy to come in and make an impact immediately. But, you know, Tashawn Reed from The Athletic posted a great stat. Well, it's an ugly stat earlier this week, saying Florida State safeties combined to allow 88 of 102 catchable targets, 86.3% to be completed for 1,250 yards, 14.2 yards per catch, and 16 touchdowns. The rest of the secondary linebackers combined to allow 11 touchdowns in 2018. That goes to show that, you know, there needs to be a little bit of work getting that safety position where it needs to be for next year. That was a problem. And the safeties were a huge target all year. And that's with Stanford Samuels III at safety. He was not nearly as good at safety as he was at corner. He was better than most of the other options, but they were better with him at corner. But you've got to be able to cover at the safety position in a quarter scheme, and they ran a lot of quarters. The especially against the spread offense in the ACC, the safety is going to have to be effectively like a corner. He's going to be in one-on-one coverage against any vertical release from that slot wide receiver. That's a bit of a problem. So now you're looking at a five-star or very high four-star, one of the top corner prospects in the country with good size, Dent at 6'1", 170, who, you know, maybe you get him to 180, 185, and he basically becomes like a nickel corner playing one of the corners or playing one of the safeties, and you get a chance to play him a good bit there. Now you might like what you got there. That's a possibility. Maybe you rotate a little bit in terms of having which safeties you have on the field for which down and distances against which teams or whatever. But they struggled. They struggled there. The other guy that I am really interested in seeing if he can stay healthy, that I think needs to be on the field at safety, that I would project, if he stays healthy, the guy that I would pencil in at one of the safety spots is actually Carlos Becker. Because he's got safety size and can cover like a corner when he's healthy. If you have a healthy Carlos Becker on the field next year for Florida State, I think it changes the defense. And then maybe Dent gets brought in at a good speed and, you know, you can work from there. Or if you're playing a team that likes to spread and you're going to have to go one-on-one a little bit more at both safeties, maybe you put both guys on the field. But to me, Carlos Becker is the guy that needs to stay healthy, that needs to be playing safety next year. And we'll see how that goes. But, you know, they really like him. It's just a matter of he's got to be healthy, got to be on the field. Now, a few other pieces of news. Obviously, Zaquandre White, academic issues, found his way off campus. Unclear whether or not he'll return. And, you know, ultimately, he's not been one of the good influences in the program. So maybe you do say, you know, c'est la vie, son. But, you know, he also is one of the more talented physical prospects on the roster. I mean, I liked him as a running back a lot. One of the most physically talented linebackers as well. Just poor mental discipline and not one of the players that was ultimately good for the culture. He's one of the bad character kids that needed to get things right in that regard. So maybe this wakes him up. Maybe it doesn't. We'll see. Maybe, you know, it's not clear whether he'll find his way back on campus. Then you have the infamous transfer portal. Xavier Peters put his name in initially and then decided to stay. Amir Osul put his name in. It's not clear he's going to leave either, but, you know, he may or may not end up on staying on campus. I'd like him to, because you need to have the depth at running back. And I think, you know, he's at least solid there and gives you some speed at the spot. Nasir Upshur appears to be, and I actually don't know for sure whether he's actually in or whether he's contemplating being in, but he's another guy that to watch for that. And then George Campbell, another guy that has contemplated it. I don't, by the time this releases, may or may not be in it. And then of course there is the, there's been the rumor, that basically started from, 247 that, from 24/7 Sports that, James Blackman was going to put his name in the portal. I don't believe anybody has actually reported, anybody credible at least, has actually reported that his name is in the portal, because I'm pretty sure it's not. But they reported that he had begun steps to put his name in the portal and consider some other options. That's something that I was told, one of my sources close to the staff, I didn't specifically speak to a staffer on this, but one of my sources close to the staff did say that the staff was taken by surprise by that report and immediately got on that situation. Every indication that I've gotten since then is that things seem to be copacetic, but again, we'll see what happens. As far as I can tell, there are also a couple other players that may end up considering what's going in there that have not been named. And, you know, there's been some folks that have referenced a possible lack of trust within the program right now, where players are just not sure of where they fit and aren't necessarily sure they trust what they see as still a new staff. And, you know, it's understandable after the last year, they want to see that things are headed in the right direction and so on. But that lack of trust needs to be addressed. And some of these players, I mean, you can't lose James Blackman. You know, that's a guy you have to keep around. Now, DeAndre Francois is another story. I think you can definitely afford to lose him. It's probably addition by subtraction in some respects. My sources were clear that they did not expect him to be on the roster in the fall. I haven't specifically asked a couple of my best folks since Francois tweeted that he was returning what this means, but I'll just say I'm still not convinced he's going to be on the roster in the fall. Now, of course, he had some great tweets. You know, once Hurts went in and put his name in the portal, immediately tweeted that he was coming back. You know, his vintage DeAndre. Did that tweet have any impact on him or Blackman? No, not at all. Hurts made his decision. Apart from that, Francois was definitely not something to be concerned about, and Hurts knew that. Now, I was told by someone not on the staff but close to the situation that Kendall Briles had said that he actually liked some of the things that he saw in film from Francois and was intrigued by him. But again, Briles has not worked with him before, and you know, that's one of those things where, listen, I'm an offensive coach too, and you know, work with quarterbacks and so on, and I know the ego that goes with that. And you think you can fix anybody, you know, oh, this guy's got the tools, I he just needs the right person to work with him. Well, you know, maybe he does think that. I don't know, and I'm not sure what the result of that's going to be. So this is basically a long way of me saying I'm not sure what's going to happen with Francois, but you know, I won't be surprised by anything at this stage. I still don't necessarily expect him to be on the roster in the fall, and I would still expect at this point Blackman to be the starter in the fall. But again, not going to be surprised by anything, given that there's some turnover and that there's, you know, some opportunity to come back from injury further for Francois and any number of things. So we'll see exactly what happens there. Now, as for the remainder of this, the remainder of the issues we need to cover, recruiting wise, I would still emphasize that Florida State needs at least one high school quarterback, ideally two in this cycle, especially since one of the quarterbacks that they're recruiting, there's some question as to how well qualified that quarterback is going to be. So you need to make sure that you're bringing in, ideally they need to get two on campus. I still think they need to sign another running back just because of numbers. It's one of those high attrition positions. You just need to have bodies. Obviously, offensive line, but don't expect a whole lot of offensive line recruiting to matter next year. It's really about the years following. And to me, I don't think they've cast a wide enough net this year, this cycle. There've been a couple guys in the state of Florida. There's one in particular who right now is getting crystal balled to Oklahoma. that doesn't have an offer from Florida State and would very much listen to an offer from Florida State. And, you know, I just think at this point there are a couple extra prospects that I would like to see the net widen just a little bit. But again, offensive line is very difficult to evaluate, and each coach and staff is going to have their own preferences on that. Defensive line also, we'll see if Odell is able to work his magic late in the process to pick up that one top shelf D tackle that he always seems to get. But right now they're missing that top shelf defensive lineman that you need to bring in each cycle. But we'll see. Also, and I'll spend more time on this in the next podcast, which certainly won't take as long to get out as this one did. But I'll spend a little bit more time on the 2019 schedule and some expectations there. Actually, I think the schedule overall is pretty friendly to Florida State. It's certainly an easier schedule than this year's schedule, than the 2018 schedule was. You know, you're subbing out Boise State for, or subbing out Notre Dame for Boise State. Boise's no picnic. You got to favor Boise in that game, but less so than Notre Dame. They're not the team that Notre Dame is. Then you get UL Monroe, should be a win. I'm going to count that as a win. A Virginia team that is on the ascent and they're not going to beat themselves. So that's a tough game at Virginia. Louisville should be a win. NC State will be a 50-50 probably game at that point. Then you get a bye before Clemson where you're not going to beat the Elf. Wake Forest, Syracuse, winnable games. Miami, winnable game. Boston College, winnable game. Alabama State, winnable game. Bye, and then Florida. And the bye before Florida matters. You get Alabama State a bye, and then Florida. That is a good opportunity to close that season out. Now, you know, for those going to those games, not exactly the most exciting home schedule, but overall, a schedule that this does set up well for a bounce back season, even if the team is not significantly improved, and you should expect the team to be improved at least over what they were last year, just if they stay a little bit healthier up front. But again, we'll talk a little bit more about that on another episode. Last couple things, got a couple question and answers here to go through. So got a question. Could you address in the next podcast why Blackman put his name in the portal? Some behind the scenes unhappiness here. Well, first of all, again, it's not clear. From what I understand, Blackman has not put his name in the portal, though he has considered putting his name in the portal and I guess may have been taking some steps to prepare to do that. Yes, there is some behind the scenes unhappiness. And again, I've had a lack of trust referenced to me by some folks in the know there. And that there are some things that need to be basically resolved and taken care of in terms of with this newer group, these players ultimately need to buy in and know that these guys have their best interests in mind. Let's see. I guess that's that. I've got a bunch of other questions that I can address, but I don't want to do them on this episode. We'll go ahead and push those to the next one. So we'll go ahead and wrap here. As always, this podcast brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty and by Garage Makeovers. I also want to thank the Patreon subscribers who are at the above the secure the bag level. That would be Hector Cartagena, Dan Alvarez, Keith Cheney, Neil Cook, and Bert Bertoldi. As always, thanks especially to those guys and to all of you who are Patreon subscribers. Going to have some video stuff up for you guys here in the very near future before the end of the month of January. Also going to get some a good bit of stuff up in February. Once I get my hands on just a little bit more film, we'll go through some of that. But until then, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.